You would think, I thought, that Mark Weingartner had just about everything he could ask for. He is a successful literary novelist. He has an acclaim from the public and from critics alike for books like The Vera Cruz Blues and Crooked River Burning. According to his biography as well, he has visited every single one of the 48 contiguous states and did so by the time he was 15. He teaches creative writing at Florida State University. He says it's the best program in the country. There may be some argument from others here today, but we'll find out about that too. He is based in Tallahassee, and I think that may be part of the reason he's so satisfied. It's the home to a good public radio station with a sense to carry to the best of our knowledge. So what's he known for these days? Well, in about a month, on November 16th, Random House will release Mark's new book, and people are just about lining up outside the stores to read it. I know from experience that you should line up to read what Mark Weingartner has written. In this case, there is an additional draw, you might say. The book he has written is The Godfather Returns. I want to know what's in it. I know you do. He's not going to tell us a whole lot because we have weeks yet before the release, but I think we're going to get a little here and there. And he is going to also answer, why now? Why this? Mark Weingartner.
Thank you.
So that's the question to start. Why this? Why now?
Well, it wasn't my idea in the first place, but a lot of times writers say that they don't choose their subjects, their subjects choose them. And for me, this was about as literal as that could possibly be. I got an email one day from my agent that had originally been from John Karp, who's the editor-in-chief of Random House, and they were looking for a writer to write a sequel to The Godfather. And John had liked my last novel, and he thought that I'd do a half-decent job with it. So this email went to a handful of writers that Random House thought would do a decent job. Somebody's agent leaked it to The New Yorker, and then it became a media circus, and they were kind of inundated with proposals for the book.
Yeah, a lot of people called it a contest.
Yeah, it was called a bake-off in the New York Post last week, which doesn't necessarily... Thank God it wasn't that, because that would not have played to my skills.
Well, it's a funny thing, though. I mean, you are known as a literary novelist. You've written at least two novels that have gotten critical acclaim. I guess what people forget is that Mario Puzo was, too.
Yeah, Puzo's first two novels were literary novels. And you know, really what interested me about this was how smart this request for proposals was. They convinced me really from the beginning that Random House was serious about having a serious book, that it wasn't a cynical marketing ploy. They said they wanted a literary novelist who was about the same age Puzo was, who'd written at least two, you know, reasonably well-received novels, including at least one big vision novel, whatever that means. And,
So was this like submitting a screenplay? Did you go to them and give them... Well, if I do this, this is what I'm going to write about?
It was really, they also wanted a brief proposal. The proposals had to be less than 10 pages long, and the turnaround time was really short. And that puzzled me at first. I thought, where's the fire? And the answer was that they didn't think that, you know, anybody they would pick for this wouldn't be at work on another novel, and they didn't want to take up too much of our time.
Well, they're probably right about that.
Yeah, they were. And so, but I mean, but you know, it wasn't just based on the proposal, in which, you know, of course I had to espouse some kind of vision for where the story was going to go, but it was probably based equally much on, you know, past books.
So they chose you, obviously. What did you propose? I mean, how much can you tell us of The Godfather Returns?
Well, from the beginning, I thought that it would make sense to begin right after the novel ended. There's a sentence toward the end of the novel that says something like, but the bloody victory of the Corleone family was not complete until after a year's worth of delicate negotiations that allowed the family to relocate to Nevada. Stop right there. First, that year's worth of negotiations, no real mafia family ever relocated its base of operations to another area. And it just glosses right over something that would have been, you know, damnably difficult to pull off.
Yeah. But there is an opening for you there. Now, Puzo himself left a gap of, what, 4 years between The Godfather and The Godfather II?
The Godfather ends in 1955, and The Godfather Returns actually begins a little bit before The Godfather ends with things that it begins with the murder of Tessio, which happens off stage in The Godfather. We don't see it, but the actual murder of Tessio on stage is the thing that sets my novel in motion. And then it goes, my book goes until 1962. So it finds a way to worm its way through the events in Godfather Part II, which only take place really in 6 months. Primarily in 1958.
And then Godfather III is much, much later.
It begins in 79.
And your novel actually picks up a little of the slack between 2 and 3 as well?
That's right. The few years, from 59 to 62 also aren't chronicled anywhere.
How much stress is there? I want to get back to some of the characters,
sure.
But how much stress is there for a novelist? I mean, this is maybe one of the classic American bestsellers. It's a book that has been read by millions, three movies that have been seen by an awful lot of people. I've heard it described as the movie that every American male has to see. When you start to sit down and write the sequel to the book that's the movie every American male is supposed to see, did your hand shake a little bit?
I guess I didn't think of it in those terms, what I wrote. If I would have, I suppose it would have paralyzed me. But, it turns out writing novels, it's really hard. and any novel, it's really hard to write a novel. It's kind of a funny question, and I understand why people ask it, but I teach, and I think, here's what's pressure, what my students are going through. I mean, I teach, supremely talented students who haven't published their first novel yet. They're writing books that they have no idea whether anyone's ever going to want to read, that anyone's ever going to publish. I was writing a book where I thought, if I do a good job, people will want to read this. There's not any pressure in that.
And, of course, you knew you were going to do a good job, but there is pressure because you had a sense of who you were as a novelist.
Right.
You had written Crooked River Burning, which I gather did have a little bit of organized crime in it.
It did. Both. It's funny because when I first got that proposal, I thought this just isn't the kind of book that I write. And then and I didn't give it a second thought for a few days, and then I woke up one day and I thought, why isn't it the kind of book I would write? I mean, if I wrote it, then it would be the kind of book that I write. but more specifically, it occurred to me, as it, for whatever wacky reason, it had never occurred to me that both of my previous novels have minor but very important organized crime plot strand. And, it's like, yes, but they're literary novels. And, and that's what they really want. What Random House really wanted out of this was a page-turner literary novel. So that's what I set out to write.
I want to go back to this question of pressure a little bit too, because you can't just consider the novel; you also have to consider the movie. And in the movie, you have Marlon Brando, you have Robert Duvall at a time when he still had hair, you have Diane Keaton. It took me a little while to recognize her when I watched the movie again recently.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Al Pacino, who is the definitive Michael Corleone. What do you do with those as a writer? Are they in your head whether you want them or not?
What lovely images to have in your head. But no, really, I ended up looking at the novel, The Godfather, so well. I probably know it better at this point, better than anyone on earth. I had to practically memorize it to find where the loose ends were and the cracks in the plot where I could fill things in or where things could take off from. And, once I started writing, really, I wasn't seeing it in those terms. I really was proceeding from the book. And while I suppose on the perimeter of my attention, there were those images, and I suppose I don't imagine those characters unlike those actors, but it's definitely true that I wasn't thinking of those actors, explicitly as I was writing.
Of course, you said you know The Godfather, the novel, about as well as anybody on earth right now, so Michael Corleone's voice is in your head one way or the other, and the movie followed it pretty closely. I mean,
yeah.
Puzo also worked on the screenplay.
That was a big help, of course. The first Godfather film is very faithful to the novel. And, Puzo really gets a bad rap, I think. I think the conventional wisdom is that Puzo wrote this trashy potboiler that Francis Ford Coppola made into great art. And, I think it really sells Puzo's contribution short. He's a hell of a storyteller. And, that novel is absolutely, it's in some fascinating no man's land between a literary novel and a genre novel. And it's absolutely both and yet neither. And, the sheer storytelling energy in that novel is something that any writer could learn a lot from.
Of course, you're a pretty good storyteller yourself. And in fact, when you started The Godfather Returns, I'm going to hold it up so that everybody sees it does exist, since you refuse to do any reading from it. But
I'm sworn to secrecy, you know. It's the world that I now live in.
I know, but the... So we're gonna smudge the secrecy a little bit. You created a character who wasn't in The Godfather.
I created several, but
the
two main characters in The Godfather Returns are Michael Corleone and Nick Geraci.
And who is Nick Geraci?
Nick Geraci is a kid who grew up in Little Italy in Cleveland. He's a boxer. He moved to New York. Came under the wing of Tessio, fought in fixed fights, and came up through the ranks. Very bright guy. Used the money that he made from throwing fights to go to college, and became a rising young lieutenant in Tessio's regime.
So already I'm beginning to see some of Mark Weingartner in this. I mean, Geraci comes from Cleveland, which is territory you know pretty well.
Right. Geraci comes from Cleveland. He's a big lummoxy guy who resents the fact that he's written off as being stupid for being a big lummoxy guy, something I've got some experience dealing with. So, yeah, sure.
And you fit right in with the rest of the novel. I mean, Geraci is appealing in the same way, I suppose, that Corleone is, but he's a killer.
Yep, that's true. I just thought that there's not ever... any sense that Michael has a worthy adversary within the Corleone family. And I just, you know, as soon as I thought of it in those terms, the story really started to come into focus for me.
Gave you a shot at creating somebody, some piece of this that's all your own, too.
Right, that's right. And I needed to be able to reimagine this world to be completely, you know, clear on what the framework of the story was that I was writing a new story through, but I definitely needed... my own characters.
Mark Weingartner is the author of The Godfather Returns, in stores on November 16th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.